T-minus 7 days away until the 49ers will make their selection for the 2024 NFL Draft. We are in crunch time, everybody. This is crunch time. So if you're a draft enthusiast, if you're a scout, if you're a GM, this is why we are still seeing those Brandon Ayuk rumors, by the way, because these GMs are thinking, I got to make my team better. I need to do it, and I need to do it now. And so I'm not saying it's necessarily desperation mode. I'd say there's a little bit more of a sense of urgency, though, because I think with all the work that the scouts have been putting in and all the work that these front offices have been putting in for several months, because remember, if you are a team that didn't make the playoffs, so again, the first half of that, more than half of the first round didn't make the playoffs. And so, and didn't really, and probably was pretty much kind of knew where they were going to be. So either if you were a wild card team and you were eliminated early, or you were in the mix, but then eliminated on the final day of the season. So you kind of knew already since really January where you were going to be drafting and what your plan needed to start being, because it's funny, but some of these teams have been almost at an advantage. It's a weird way to say that, but in terms of the scouting community, you are somewhat of at an advantage if you are a weaker team, because you've been able to get extra time. Might be 2 weeks, might be 3 weeks, but you definitely have gotten extra time to plan, right? To be able to figure out what direction you want your franchise to go in. Are you still in line to get a quarterback? Are you trying to add more guys at edge? Are you trying to add in the secondary? Are you trying to, you know, any number of things, right, along the trenches, etc.? And obviously every team should be trying to do that pretty much every season, but some teams are just desperate to do that and have to do something in those key spots that affect winning on Sundays, on Mondays, on Thursdays, and now sometimes Saturdays too. So it's been, you know, it's going to be, I think, a really interesting night. I think, like I said before, and I'll keep saying it, I think it's a very deep draft at a lot of different spots. I do think that there's some high-end level talent early in the draft, and then it really becomes a very interesting chess match once we get into the second round, and especially into second and third round range. It becomes very, very interesting. And it becomes then a game about really about whose scouting department did their homework the best and found guys that are ready to contribute. So if you're a second or third rounder, you could be starting in week one, right? And a lot of times those guys are. So I want to get into that. And really what I want to get into today is talking about what positions that I really feel like the 49ers will attack at that 31st pick and the 63rd, assuming that they don't trade out of those picks. So really those first two picks, and then beyond that, what I think is an area where the 49ers can get a lot stronger in this draft, even if they're picking in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round. So we've talked about guys that are the draft crushes, right? The sleeper picks, those kind of picks. But I want to identify, again, the position groupings for, regardless of pick, who are the position groups for those first two picks that I think would really help the 49ers this season, beyond as well, but especially this season. And then what is another player, impact player or position group that they can get, say, in the fifth or sixth round that could also make a big impact on this squad? And with that, thank you so much again for joining me. This is the Golden Pick Podcast, and I am your host, Guy Deal. And this is something, like I said, I really enjoy. It's the time of year that I enjoy the most, for sure. So for me, it's a really exciting time to be able to break these things down. And with that said, I think I know that the 49ers can get not just one or two impact players with those first few picks. I think they can get three or four impact players. 49ers have a total of 10 picks with all that's said and done. After all the, whether it's trades and suspended picks, all these different things that have occurred up until this point, the 49ers now have 10 draft picks to play with, to work with, to trade, to do whatever they need to do to improve the football team. And even a team as talented as the 49ers were this past season, getting all the way to the Super Bowl, at times looking like the most dominant team in the league, and really blowing the doors off good teams, blowing the doors off teams that were top 10, top 15 teams in the league, and looking like, as long as they stayed healthy, that it was going to be very difficult for anyone to stop them. I do think health did play a part, and I'll talk about it just real quick as an aside. Obviously, Dre Greenlaw going out in that Super Bowl was huge, but I also think that guys like Kittle and maybe a few others were not at their peak the way that they were earlier in the season. And this is still something that, even though the 49ers were a lot healthier last year, I still feel as though this is a point of emphasis where guys need to be at their best. They need to be at their sharpest. They need to, and some of it is luck, but I think a lot of it too is what guys typically do on a season-to-season basis in terms of their recovery, in terms of what they do, and in terms of just their own injury histories. So, you know, one thing that was pretty evident, that the 49ers were very fortunate last year that CMC didn't get hurt, because he's a guy who's gotten hurt from time to time in his career, from time to time. And so he didn't really get hurt. Trent Williams didn't really get hurt very much, maybe a little bit on the ankle there. But for the most part, he was healthy the whole season. And so was the rest of that line. So this is something that you have to project for the season that you're going into, that you may not be as healthy. So the depth that I was talking about in this draft can come back to really be an important factor in this upcoming season, in terms of your own depth chart and how you add depth to your roster. So that being said, those first two picks, so 31st overall, and I'm just going to assume for the sake of argument that the 49ers do not trade up or trade out of that spot. And I do think that trading back is an option. And I only say that because there is so much, there's so much value in the second round and the third round in this draft. And like I said, there's a lot of depth even beyond those rounds. So if the guy that you really want, or the two or three guys that you really want, aren't there at 31, it's not like you can't move to 37 or 38, pick up an extra pick, and maybe in the third round, third, fourth round, because of the depth in this draft, then they get another great talent in those rounds as well and still get a really good player at 37 or 38. So, but assuming they don't, assuming the 49ers stand pat at 31, I still think you have to address the offensive line, whether it's the tackle position, whether it's the guard, whether it's the center, because let's be real clear, not just because they were fortunate to not get really injured much last year along the offensive line, it doesn't mean that there can't be an infusion of talent among those backups. I mean, let's be honest, at right guard, there was an injury there to Feliciano, or he went out, Burford came in, missed an assignment, you lose the Super Bowl. It wasn't all on Spencer. I'm not trying to say that, but it's just to put a magnifying glass on the fact that if you had a more talented or more and a more prepared backup at that position, you maybe that doesn't happen, right? And so I think once Feliciano went out, obviously once Greenlaw went out, those things ended up looming really large in that game, and those kind of things loom really large in any big game. So we can talk about depth at linebacker as well, because that came into play in that Super Bowl as well. Like I said, this wasn't just on the offensive line and that missed assignment at the end. So there were other places where, you know, we were just lacking in that second half, you know. So those are kind of things that can get improved. But without question, I think you need to start preparing for the end of Trent Williams. And it's a sad thing to say, because Trent, for my money, is the greatest left tackle I've ever seen. I've been watching football for 30 years, maybe more. And I know there's people who've been watching football 40, 50 years. And I think you'll be hard pressed to find a more athletic, big bodied left tackle than Trent Williams. He's just been magnificent. And he's somebody who's still playing at such a high all pro level at 35, 36 years old. And so almost 36 now. And you don't really know how many more years he's got left. I mean, he might have, I mean, at this level that he's playing, you could say, well, he might have another 2 or 3 years. He might. But again, that mileage eventually does catch up to you too. So you have to start preparing, you know, for the fact that you're going to need a legitimate blindside protector there. You're going to need the left tackle. You still could get better at right tackle. You can get better at right guard. And we'll talk about that in future episodes especially. But to me, it's addressing the tackles. I think that the value right now in the NFL is having a left tackle, having a right tackle, being able to protect. And the reason for that is the simple fact is that these edge rushers are getting, seems like they're getting smaller and faster, more agile. Some of them are still really big and strong and agile as well, like you have a Bosa or Myles Garrett and these guys. But you have a lot of these other guys that are smaller. They can rush the passer, and they're getting underneath the pad level of these right tackles and left tackles. And so you need guys there that still need to be big and strong, but they need to be able to have great footwork. They need to be athletic. And so I think that it's a position that's very, very important, and one that the 49ers can't really ignore, especially, and when I say ignore, I mean ignore early in the draft, right? And they kind of showed that when they drafted Aaron Banks a couple of seasons ago, right? And he's a guard, but you drafted him in the second round, and that was, to me, a good sign of, hey, we need to invest into the offensive line in the early rounds if we're not going to be able to invest in them financially in free agency, okay? And then at least you get a few seasons at a reasonable deal before these guys' contracts really blow up. And the other reason for that, like I said, especially why you need to focus on the offensive line, is that you found your franchise guy at quarterback. At least that's what we believe. That's what we've been told. That's what you seem to believe as a franchise. So you have to protect that guy, and you have to build up that line. You know, it's almost pains me to say this because they're such a huge rival, but I want to see our version of the early 90s Cowboys lines. You know, I want to see, you know, guys like Larry Allen, who eventually became a 49er. I want to see these big dudes and these guys that can protect Purdy. I mean, that's the most talent you can find. Put it on, along that line, first level of that line, the backups. It needs to be such a huge priority when you're about to pay this guy to be really your franchise guy and not just a guy that is playing like a franchise guy, but you're not paying him like it. So if you're going to make that kind of investment on Purdy and on your franchise, the offensive line has to be an early round priority. And so for me at 31, whether it's Amarius Mims, the big tackle out of Georgia, whether it's, you know, maybe a center, maybe if Jackson Powers Johnson is still there out of Oregon, he's a guy that I've mocked a lot when I've done my mocks. And you know, it would be great. That doesn't mean Brendel didn't do a decent job, but you can get better. And again, Brendel's on the other side of 30. So you have to plan for these things because you don't really have a good backup in those positions. To me, whether those are the three main positions, by the way, whether it's left tackle, right tackle, but it's left tackle, center, and right tackle for me. And I can almost rank it like that in terms of importance. So it might be someone like that. I know we've talked a lot about, and 49ers fans are aware of, guys like Jordan Morgan and Graham Barton. I keep seeing more and more Graham Barton go early. Same with Jordan Morgan. Sometimes he goes a little earlier than 31. Sometimes he's still there. But for me, I would rather take someone like Mims, and I probably would take Guyton as well out of Oklahoma. And some of that is the conference. Some of that is the competition. And it's just really some of the assessments that I've seen when I watch their tape and I watch how they might project in the NFL. So I do think Morgan is a good player. I think he could be a good player. I just don't think he's better than those other guys that I mentioned. So if they're there, if those guys are there in that spot at 31, I think you have to take a shot at either a tackle or a center, like I said, somebody like Powers Johnson. And then at 63, this is where it does get very, very interesting. I think the 49ers still need help in the secondary. And there's no question about it. The 49ers have one really good corner in Mooney Ward. I think he's a great corner. I don't necessarily think he's the best corner that we've had. He played really well last year. I think Demo Lenore is probably the better athlete of the two, just doesn't have the size. Had a great season. But beyond Demo and Ward, who's coming off injury, by the way, he's coming off offseason surgery. So keep that in mind, because that was something that kind of went somewhat unreported with all the chatter about Brandon Ayuk and other additions the 49ers made. But Mooney Ward, Charvarius Ward, did have surgery, I believe, on his knee, because needed to do some cleanup there. And so that's not something that, again, it doesn't sound like it's too alarming when he's, you know, you're talking about a guy, you know, he's not, you know, 34, 35 years old. I understand that piece. But at the same time, if he's your top corner and he's getting surgery on his knee, it's you need to be aware that these things don't just magically get better for the next 3 or 4 years, right? And so you have to prepare for that. On top of which, you have two really viable corners. The rest of the guys are really unknown. I'm hoping Samuel Womack will turn into a guy. We're hoping some of these other guys will turn into players as well. I don't know about Ambry Thomas. I still don't know. I don't personally think Ambry Thomas is a guy that can be a legitimate starting cornerback on the outside. I don't. Not to mention the fact the 49ers don't really have a slot corner right now. So to me, that's a really interesting spot. I don't think you draft a slot corner early in this draft, but I definitely think you can draft a starting cornerback with your second pick. I really do. And if that's not the case, I definitely think, again, edge comes into play. Unless a D-tackle falls that is just an amazing, beastly type D-tackle, you know, whether it's somebody like Ruka Rororo or maybe a Fisk. So if somebody like that falls to you at 63, then I think you probably take a shot at that, and then you can figure out the cornerback situation a little bit later. But I do think that is an interesting spot with cornerback, because I think after, say, the fourth round or so, it gets very, very dicey in terms of finding a quality, really high-quality corner. I think second and third round is where I would say you're going to find a lot of your top-end quality at corner. So those first three rounds, I should say. And then beyond that, you really have to do your homework as a scout to find some good quality cornerbacks. I think safeties, there's more safeties in this draft. So you can get a good safety in the fifth, sixth round still. But cornerback gets very, very tricky, very, very. So they're going to go early. There's going to be a run on cornerbacks in those first three rounds. So keep an eye on that. But a guy that I would like to see, you know, I still really enjoy watching Max Melton a lot. You know, I'm saying in that 63rd overall range. I think Max Melton is a really interesting player. He's a guy that sticks to his man really well. He can play press man. He can play off. He can play in the slot if you need him to. He'd be a little bit of a bigger slot, but still he can play in the slot. And he can play on the outside. Very athletic, fast. So he's interesting. Another guy to me that I've just really enjoyed his film more and more, he might be more of a third rounder than a second, would be somebody like Renardo Green from Florida State. Good size, really good ball skills, somebody who anticipates passes very, very well and has enough foot speed to stay with his receivers on deeper routes. So that's sort of how I see it. I see it going offensive line, probably a tackle, maybe a center, but probably a tackle and then a cornerback in terms of getting the most value that you can and also addressing your most pressing needs that you have. Okay, and then after that, then we can talk about finding linebacker help, you know, because like I said, because of Dre's injury and then just being able to get more depth and more talent there, finding maybe another tight end. I definitely think there's some great pass catchers later in this draft. You know, a guy I really like if he's there in the fourth or fifth round would be someone like Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. He's probably after the, you know, guys like Bowers and all these guys go in the beginning. There's those few tight ends go in the beginning. I think Ben Sinnott's probably the best tight end in this draft. So someone like that would be really interesting to bring in. You can run double tight end sets. And again, just have there as a depth piece, because after, and I know we picked up Saubert, I get it. We signed a guy that's been in the league, but I don't view him as some kind of difference making offensive piece. I think he's brought in for blocking and the occasional, you know, red zone situation or whatever, to spot George Kittle. So, but beyond that, I'm not really huge on the backups we currently have in Willis and Latu, especially not on Latu. I think that Willis has a chance, but he's undersized. So that's kind of how I view it. There's obviously a lot more that we can talk about, defensive line and all these other things, but in the beginning of this draft, I definitely think you have to prioritize protection for your biggest investment in Brock Purdy that's going to come up in about 1 year's time. So that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you so much, as always. I really appreciate the support, everybody. You can keep catching this podcast, whether it be here on, you know, whether it's Podbean, whether it's iHeart, all these different places. I really appreciate your support. And I'll see you soon. Take care, everybody. See you later, faithful.